gentlemen. Firstly, I'd like once more to say how very happy I am to be here tonight to come and talk to you about the independent direct voice. Now, as far as is in my power, during the evening, I will answer as many questions as possible, because mediumship, by its very nature, whether it's my form of mediumship, which is very rare, or whether it is any other particular kind of mediumship, raises, obviously, many, many problems. Anyone who has studied spiritualism or psychical research, who has delved, will obviously, at times, come up against various problems. Sometimes these problems are of the kind which are not easily answered. Sometimes they are causing confusion in the mind, and sometimes even to people who know a great deal of the subject, a certain amount of uncertainty. One likes to feel, obviously, that in communication, that what we are receiving is absolutely 100%. By that I mean that we are receiving a contact with a person or persons known to us, people that we have loved and still love, who have gone on before us, and with the realization that we have of communication, we naturally anticipate when we sit with a medium, if the medium is a medium, in the real meaning of the term, that we are going to receive and make a contact which will give us conviction. Now, one man's conviction of survival, obviously, is not another man's conviction. What will satisfy one person will not necessarily satisfy another. So, we obviously, according to our intellect, according to our outlook, according to our emotional response at a sound, so we shall form and make our own judgment and opinion. Now, there are so many facets to this that it's almost impossible to know where to start. But as an independent voice medium, which is the rarest form possibly of all phenomena, when one makes a contact, and you really are in contact with someone that you have known and loved, if the conditions are good and the reception is clear and distinct, you will have the opportunity to communicate and converse in almost as natural a way as if the person were speaking to you on the telephone. But of course, there are complexities. I've often had it said to me by an individual who said, "Oh, that was definitely my son speaking, only he could have said this or that, but it didn't sound identically like his voice." Well, we have to realize that the voices that we hear that are brought to us are, in a sense, artificially produced. There is no such thing, really, as a natural voice of a discarnate being. By this I mean that the individual who has passed from this world, from this life, no longer has the same physical body. He is no longer endeavoring to communicate under the same condition. There is a strained atmosphere, an atmosphere possibly of anticipation, of emotion, of excitement, of intensity, not only on the part of the communicator, but also of the recipient of the message. And I think, therefore, when one considers that this must be, by the very nature of things, that they are transmitting their thoughts via an artificial voice box, which is created, so we are told, from an ectoplasm, which is drawn chiefly from the medium, and sometimes also the sitters can make a contribution, which can also in some way adjust or affect or interfere. If a person in a seance happens to have a plus power, which gives out a certain substance which can be caught up with the mediums, then you can have an increasing of this power, which makes possible communication, but you can also add, to some extent, presumably, I presume this, some confusion. The point is, of course, obviously, we do not know enough about it. All we know is that ectoplasm, a substance which is drawn from the medium, which is a life-giving force, can be utilized in such a way by certain individuals on the other side who've made a study of it, and they can recreate temporarily a voice box, which under certain conditions can be used by the communicating entity. And so you have an individual from the other side of life attempting to contact us, trying to manipulate this new method of communication between their world and this, also trying to recapture and remember idiosyncrasies about themselves in regard perhaps to their speech, their manner of speech, even their nationality, even things which are very personal to themselves and which would be acceptable and understood by the recipient of the message. In other words, you have several things happening at the same time, and the difficulty obviously is for the communicator to be able to transmit with a clarity not only that which they wish to impart, which they hope will be acceptable as evidence, but also they want to transmit themselves, that is, more completely as a person. They want to transmit in such a way that they will be recognizable. Now, of course, there are people, obviously, who have sat, and indeed some of the recordings that I will play you will prove this point, that some of the voices are so full of personality, so absolutely depersonal, that there can be no shadow of a doubt whatsoever that it is that particular person communicating. But it doesn't alter the fact that every voice that comes, in a sense, is artificially produced. It's not produced by me as the medium, it's produced separate and apart from me, but nevertheless, from me is drawn this energy, life-giving force, ectoplasm, call it what you will, which makes it possible for the other side temporarily to assume their old selves and communicate with us and transmit various messages which they hope will be understood and received, which of course invariably they are. Now, many years ago, in the great days of spiritualism, if I may be forgiven for not calling the past the great days, but to me I came in on the fringe. But in the early years in which I now speak, there were many, many mediums who were capable of producing direct voice, materialization, who had this marvelous physical mediumship which now has become more and more and more rare. And, of course, if you go back and look further still, back to the Victorian era and the early 20th century, you have the wonderful records that were made and kept by Crookes and Lodge and Flammarion, these men of science who had everything to lose by proclaiming the truth of spiritualism, and certainly had nothing to gain, only derision from the world. They had these wonderful instruments, these wonderful mediums, that they could sit with under their own conditions, test conditions, strict conditions, where fraud was out of the question, and on certain occasions, not always, because no mediumship will always function, they were able to convince themselves of the reality of communication between this world and the next. The days of which I speak are no longer with us. I don't wish to make any comment about modern spiritualism. I'm not in the right place where I could really discuss what I feel and what I think. But nevertheless, it is true that this movement was built up on physical mediumship. The very strength of this movement, which brought it to the fore in the 20th century in particular, was the wonderful researches of Crookes, Flammarion, Doyle, Lodge, who were able to sit with these remarkable people who had such a wonderful phenomena, such a wonderful mediumship, which no longer exists, unfortunately, or if it does, it's kept very much within the confines of private homes. The tragedy today is that we have not got physical mediumship. And this, I think, is the most terrible thing in spiritualism of the day. We have loads of clairvoyants, loads of so-called trance mediums. We have all aspects of spiritualistic phenomena on different levels, some good, some not so good, and some pretty grim, which does more harm than good. But real mediumship is the foundation of spiritualism. Without it, spiritualism will gradually fizzle out. And this, I think, is the most appalling thing, that in the 1970s, that, as far as I know, apart from myself, there is now a voice medium in this country. As far as I know, there are none in Europe. And since I've just recently come back to America, and I toured quite extensively, and I met many, many people in spiritualism, in all walks of life, in many ways connected with psychical research and spiritualism. And I met Professor Bennett in New York at Columbia University, and we had many conversations. And he's a great idealist, a great researcher, very sincere man who's looking for good mediumship. He said, you can't find it in New York. And this is the tragedy, that this mediumship, which is the very essence, the very strength of this movement, is gradually dying out. And until mediumship is developed to the caliber of the old days, I really don't know what the future holds. Clairvoyance, trance, mediumship serve a purpose. Healing has now become the great thing in spiritualism. Important though it is, it's not going to prove survival. And the very basis of spiritualism, and the truth of spiritualism, surely, is the fact that we can communicate with the dead. If we don't prove this to humanity, then we have no leg to stand on. We should simply fall away. And so I feel that with independent direct voice, and particularly also materialization, are two great forms of mediumship which have demonstrated the reality of the spirit for so long, and so convincingly to so many people in so many different walks of life, and particularly to those who, by the very fact that they are of the type and mind and caliber like Doyle and Lodge and Crookes and these people, I feel we can prove our case scientifically. And this is another point. Over the years, I have, of my own free will, no one's badgered me into doing this, at different times, I have submitted myself quite willingly and quite readily and quite happily to scientific research. In fact, I'm still in the throes of doing something of that nature. But the point is that until we can prove this scientifically to the world, we are not going to give full conviction to the world. I don't necessarily mean by this that I think that only through science can it bring the full reality home to the world. I'm quite sure that there are innumerable numbers of people who are not concerned with scientific research, are not concerned with that sort of evidence. There are many, many people who go to spiritualist meetings who are quite content to sit in the audience and have a little message from Mr. So-and-so or Mrs. So-and-so and go away quite comforted, quite happy, but then that is spiritualism. I'm not objecting to that. But the point is that we've got to go much further than that. We've also got to get even beyond the physical phenomena, as important though it is, and the evidence that comes through it. We've also got to get on to the philosophy and the teachings and the higher realizations as to what lies behind all the efforts that are being made by the other side to communicate with us. But of course I realize that tonight you chiefly come to hear about the voices, and so therefore perhaps it would be wiser and better if I skip to my own particular mediumship and not make too many comments about what I think or what I feel about spiritualism generally and the lack of good mediumship and so on. But nevertheless, I find I can never really get away from it. When I was in New York, I gave a lecture at Riverside, and I didn't intend to pass any comments about modern mediumship or modern spiritualism, but I found I couldn't get away from it. I'm afraid that it's the rot setting in. And this to me is a tragedy. In the old days, mediumship was a sacred trust. It was something that you developed over many, many years in the privacy of your own home. Actually, mediumship sprang from the old Victorian prayer circle or prayer gatherings where the family came together in the quietude and the peace of their home, and they opened their hearts and their minds to God. And in consequence, from this came the real spiritualism. Of this I have no doubt whatsoever. If you want to be a medium, if you really want to serve, if you really want to develop your spiritual gifts, there's only one place, and I say this with emphasis, there's only one place where you will develop those faculties, those gifts of the Spirit, so that they can be used in the proper way, is only in the privacy of your own home circle, or in the home circle of other friends, who are likewise unto yourself, sincere, full of love, full of cooperation, working together for the common good. There's only one way. No one can develop a person. This is the thing that I want to say very strongly. There is no human being alive, and never has been in my opinion, that can develop anyone else to become a medium. Nobody can do this. In fact, indeed, much more harm is often done by people who attempt to develop mediums. And quite often they need development themselves. You've got to sit patiently in harmony and in love with those whom you know and love, quietly waiting for the Spirit to descend upon you and move you, rather like the old Quakers. They, in a sense, are perhaps in some ways more spiritualistic than we are. I really believe this, because they do sit and wait for the Spirit to move them. And often, and I've been to Quaker meetings, where just ordinary people are gathered together, and all of a sudden, someone, quite an ordinary person, will stand up and give a wonderful oration, obviously under the influence of some soul from the other side in a trance state. This is mediumship. In the old days, we had wonderful mediums who could go on a platform, and they'd go into trance, and the whole hall would be full of the power of the Holy Spirit. The person would be completely taken over. I remember Mrs. Merrick Morris, who was a wonderful medium, who used to take the fortune theatre. And here was an ordinary working woman, more or less, who in trance would be absolutely taken over by this wonderful personality. These things don't happen anymore. There's something radically wrong in spiritualism. We are not getting the mediumship that we deserve or what we should have. Perhaps we don't deserve it. I don't know. But I can only speak from my own experience. I came in the 20s, on the fringe. I remember years and years and years ago, when I first came into spiritualism, I was living in St. Albans in Hertfordshire, and I was a member of a little home circle where we had the most remarkable phenomenon. And the leader of the circle, if I can call her the leader, she was the hostess of the house in which the circle was held, she said, "Oh, Leslie, would you like to come to London with me to sit in the circle?" I'd never been to a circle outside this one in St. Albans. So this Saturday we came up to Camden Town. Well, we were taken to a most squalid little house. Actually, quite frankly, the whole atmosphere of the place was appalling. And the woman who opened the door, she had three or four small little children, very badly dressed. In fact, the whole place was full of depression through poverty. Here was this woman who was so called blind that if you'd have given her all the world, she couldn't have spoken English. We went upstairs into this attic room, about 20 of us, if all told. And for two solid hours, this woman was in trance. And through her came various souls who spoke to us. All different types of individuals, culture, expressions that were used which were obviously far beyond our own comprehension. Here was mediumship, real mediumship, not this sort of thing that we get so often, which really, quite frankly, is a disgrace. I say these things because I feel them, I know them to be true. Too much nonsense is preached, too much nonsense is given out, too much stupidity, too much harm is done to this movement by bad mediumship. But anyway, the voices themselves, when they are clear and distinct, full of personality, no one, unless you were very narrow-minded or very bigoted, could possibly doubt the authenticity of them. They come, they speak, they give their evidence. There's no half measures, there's no fishing, there's no handing it back to you after you've given it out, like goes on in so many meetings. You know what I'm talking about. The point is that mediumship, real mediumship, must be developed over many, many years before a medium should attempt to do any public work whatsoever. Too many mediums rush onto the platform before they're ready, and in consequence they do very little good and a lot more harm. The voices, when they come, when the conditions are good, they come with tremendous impact. And anyone who has had the experience of sitting in a silence, a great voice silence, and having genuine communication with someone that they have known and loved, and listen to the conversation, and often have it now as we do, taped on a machine that you can listen back to it afterwards. You can play it for your relations and your friends, who perhaps are not even interested. But in many instances, the message of the spirit can be transferred by the aid of the tape recorder from one place to another, and the evidence can be built up and strengthened, and many people can find interest, if not immediately, conviction. No one expects conviction to happen immediately. This is something which must build up over a long series of experiments. There again, I wouldn't suggest at one moment that it's necessarily so that by sitting once with me as a medium that you will presumably get your evidence. You may be fortunate from the first instance of coming, receive an interesting communication from some relation, but often when they first come, obviously there are difficulties, and they will in consequence have difficulty in transmitting. But invariably, a person on sitting for the first time will receive some communication that at least, if not fully evidential for them, will set them on the path of further searching and further receiving of evidence and building up of a case for survival. The voices themselves will obviously vary. There are times when I sit, and this often happens, I would suggest that the percentage of good sittings I have is roughly about 50%. And perhaps 50% of times that I sit, nothing happens at all, or perhaps after sitting 20 minutes, a little voice, usually Mickey, my control, will come through and say, "I'm sorry, we can't do anything." And it's just enough power for them to tell us that there's no good continuing. This is mediumship. This is how it should be. No medium can guarantee anything. There's no turning on a proverbial tap. There's no sitting 8 or 10 times a day, one after the other, and giving everybody a little bit of this and a little bit of that. That's not mediumship. That's not spiritualism. That's nonsense. Mediumship, real mediumship, happens as it happens and when it happens. If you're a professional medium, naturally you have to have appointments. You may say to a client, "I will see you at 11 o'clock on such and such a day." The person may come at 11 o'clock, you sit in good faith. But there's no guarantee that the other side are going to communicate at 11 o'clock. This is mediumship. All one can do if you're a professional mediumship is give people the opportunity to sit with you and hope and pray that they will receive some conviction, some message, some help, some comfort. But mediumship is not something that can be turned on like a proverbial tap. Any medium that gives you a sitting at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock is no damn good to anybody, because you can be quite sure it's not genuine. Because no medium can turn on the proverbial tap all day long, every hour. Somewhere something is radically, radically wrong. Actually, a medium, I take myself, if I had my way, and if it were possible, if I were in a financial position to be able to do it, I would only sit twice a week, and that perhaps would be once too much. I know that mediumship is necessary. People need mediums. They go to this medium, they go to that medium, they're searching, they're seeking comfort, they're seeking evidence, they're seeking the things that are so essential and necessary to them. And mediumship, if it's a good form of mediumship, is very much in demand. And in consequence, the medium often falls into the trap of being overworked, overtaxed. There have been in the past remarkable mediums who had wonderful powers, who, when they couldn't produce results, started to fail. This has always been a bugbear of spiritualism. The whole history of spiritualism is strewn with fraud. This is tragic, but it's true. Because mediumship cannot be flogged. I remember many years ago, I used to do these enormous meetings at the Kingsway Hall, Scarlet Theatre, all the major town halls of England, every night, one night stand, you might say, demonstrating to the audience the direct voice phenomenon, which was wonderful, wonderful. It nearly killed it. There came a time when I realized that it could no longer be. I could not continue. So I had to give up. For 18 years, I withdrew from all public activity, all public spiritualistic life. I even had my telephone changed to a different number and avoided people, because I knew that if I didn't do that, I'd lose my mediumship. And this is unfortunately what has happened to so many in the past. They have lost their mediumship, but they still try to soldier on, they still try to give sittings, and they fall back on platitudes, they fall back on stock characters, sort of vague descriptions, such as, oh, that is, I see so-and-so with you, and I think it's your mother. Oh, no, it's not my mother's not dead. Well, it must be your grandmother, dear. I mean, of course. This is silly. You see, there's nothing wrong with spiritualism fundamentally, nothing wrong fundamentally with mediumship, when it is properly used and properly expressed and properly demonstrated, and the mediumship is guarded against, well, all the weaknesses which do come with overtaxing oneself psychically, physically, and mentally, and in a sense spiritually too. We have a wonderful, wonderful realization to give to the world, but until we present it as it must be presented, until we do what we should do in an intelligent kind of way and explain and express ourselves